Welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. If you're new to the show tonight, I'm Karen Tate, your hostess, and that musical opening for the show was just a little snippet of a nice song by Abigail Spinner McBride called Let the Way Be Open. Well, tonight I'm very honored to have on the show Karen Berg, the spiritual leader and director of the Kabbalah Center International. It's a not-for-profit organization leading the way to bringing Kabbalah to everyone who wants to learn. But it hasn't always been that way. In the days Karen was studying Kabbalah, women were forbidden from studying this material. But that didn't stop Karen from abiding by her calling and realizing her purpose in this lifetime. She now oversees the operation and staff of more than 20 centers and 50 study groups worldwide, and her work goes beyond the Kabbalah Center, as we're going to discuss. She's the founder of Peace Through People, the Kabbalah Center Peace Initiative, a charitable foundation which works to reduce the impact of global poverty and natural disasters. She's also involved with the Correctional Outreach Initiative, serving prisoners and victims of domestic abuse. She's the author of God Wears Lipstick, which talks about the sacred feminine in Kabbalah, which is going to be a big focus of our show tonight. We'll talk about her work with kids across the globe. You know, she's probably too humble to say it, but at the center, she is a rock star to those who go there. She's also married with two daughters, and, well, the rest we'll hear about in a few moments when we begin our chat, because Karen's led a very divinely guided and, some might say, a very magical life. So remember, for future shows, if you can't listen at 6 p.m. Pacific live with us, you can always catch the show later from the archives at your convenience. And if you can't call in and have questions, you can always email your questions several days before the show, as many of you listeners have this week for Karen. But if you are listening and you want to call in later, the number to call is 718-766-4662. And when we have a natural break in the conversation, we'll go to you when we see your number on the switchboard. But for all my listeners out there, new and old, thanks for your input and your feedback. Your comments are always welcome, and like I say, they're gas in my tank. I hope you'll stay with me after my chat with Karen. I want to share with you the news of Sacred Sundays, an eclectic service honoring the Divine Feminine and Sacred Masculine every fourth Sunday, and it happens in North Hollywood. And for my social justice friends who are activists out there, well, I don't know if you've heard about it because the mainstream news isn't carrying it, but there's been an occupation of Wall Street going on for the last 5 days. You should be sure to look. Rachel Maddow has been talking about it. Keith Olbermann's covering it tonight. Be sure you know about that, and also this other movement that's about to happen in October. It's called Stop the Machine, Create a New World. They call it the occupation of Washington, D.C., standing against militarism and the corporatocracy of the United States. It starts October 6th. If you've been wanting to focus your activism, there's an opportunity. But we'll talk more about that after the chat with Karen. And I'll tell you about a worthy cause coming up for Solstice, too, that was sent in from Reverend Connie, one of my listeners. And finally, a reminder of the show's motto before we begin tonight's chat. In the words of Gandhi, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, but then you win. So, Karen, you're there on the air. Thank you for your patience while we got through those few announcements. I appreciate your time tonight.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on your show. It's a pleasure for me to be here.
Well, yeah, I was looking forward to it. We've been trying to make arrangements to have you on for some time now, and I'm glad tonight's finally the night. I wanted to share a little bit more of your bio with my listeners. I think this next part will be very interesting to them. As I already mentioned, you're married with two daughters. What I didn't say is she's married to Rav Berg. Well, for a time, she worked for Rav Berg as an administrator before he became her husband. 9 years passed. And life changed for them both, but they were reconnected through a business associate. When Karen learned that Rav was studying Kabbalah, she offered to work for free in exchange for lessons. Well, as I said before, in those days, women were forbidden to study Kabbalah, but the Rav was open-minded, and he sought guidance from his teacher in a dream. Without any sign, the following day, he meant to inform Karen that he wouldn't be able to teach her, but instead, Karen surprised the Rav by revealing her dream about a strange man. By her description of the man's garb and language, the Rav knew this was his teacher that had come to Karen in her dream and the blessing for which he had hoped. It was a pivotal moment in Kabbalistic history and in the Rav and Karen's personal lives. After that, Karen delved deeply into the study of Kabbalah, and years later they married. And it was Karen who said to the Rav, her husband, "If I can understand these teachings and I'm not such a great big soul, then others can too. Let's open the Kabbalah Center to everyone." So Karen has committed her life to introducing the teachings of Kabbalah as a practical tool for actualizing potential and to expand the presence of spirituality in the world. What a wonderful story, Karen.
Thank you so much. I'm glad that you've been able to read all of it. Thank you so much. Really, really good. I also have two sons, though, right?
I'm sorry, say again. I couldn't quite hear you.
I have sons that help me run this Kabbalah Center these days.
Oh, and you have, okay, and you have sons too now.
I have two sons and two daughters.
Oh, okay. So we need to update that bio.
Yes.
Well, you know, of course we're going to get to the important work you're doing globally with the Peace Through People Project and the Power of Peace Conference you attended. But first, let me get a few preliminary questions out of the way, because I want to dispel some maybe misinformation that's out there. You know, many of my listeners consider themselves advocates for the idea of the sacred feminine, whether she be deity, archetype, or ideal. And, you know, since I've been going to the Kabbalah Center myself, I realize that there are many ideas in sync over there with my listeners, such as the lunar calendar, the new moon rituals, astrology, protection talismans like the red string of the matriarch Rachel, the law of cause of effect, the magic of the 72 names of God, all of that stuff. But particularly in Kabbalah, it seems like there's a recognition of the spiritual authority and stature of women. And you've even written your book, God Wears Lipstick. So can you explain where the Shekinah or the sacred feminine and women fit within the Kabbalistic practice?
Well, I'll try. First of all, let me say that, you know, we look at today, look at the year turning 2011-2012, and we notice this tremendous upheaval all over the world. But in the Kabbalah, we talk about the Shekinah. The Shekinah is the, if you will, the mate of God. There's a male and a female, and the female represents this attribute called the Shekhinah. And in there is the light. It envelops the male aspect. It's the female that brings that to the energy of the world. And it is our job to bring this female into us. Without the equalization, as it's happening today, as we see in businesses, and as we see in many places in the world. After all, the uprisings that we see in the third world countries, these are all the countries where women have no rights, and there is no human dignity. So when, and it is written, that when the light of the sun, which is male, and the light of the moon, which is the female, will be able to be equal, then we will have the rise of the Messiah. And what does that mean? It means that today we see more and more women becoming empowered, becoming involved in politics, in business. And the reason that this is happening, the shift which is happening, is because there is an empowerment cosmically of the female source, which is what we call the Shekhinah, to rise itself and to bring it to an equal level in this world of its male counterpart. And that's what's happening. That's why the world is in the unrest it is. It's not unrest, it's just an evolvement of the female principle, of allowing the female right to be spiritually inclined to the male, in other words, equal. We're not looking to over-empower. We're simply feeling that there is a way that we can have equal, and it will eventually evolve the same way as in 1920, the female didn't have rights in the United States at all to vote. Today, we see a far more beautiful scene, and that's our work, to increase the level in our lifetime here of the Shekhinah, of the woman's role in this world. And that's why it's our role as women to bring the spirituality to the people, because naturally the woman is considered the more spiritual. That's why the woman bears the child. She's the nurturer. She's like Mother Nature. And Mother Nature is what brings all the seeds to fruition, the trees, the fruits, etc. True, without rain, male principle, you can't have this growth. But the womb of life exists within the spirituality of the female, and it is her job to bring that spirituality home in her house, in her relationship, and in all that where she is. She is the what we call the Shekhinah. So that means that she has the force to bring the spiritual energy and to engulf it to the people which are around her.
Well, I have to tell you, you're speaking the language of my listeners, Karen.
Well, that's good.
So can we say that Kabbalah is egalitarian?
I think we can. But Kabbalah, you know, we make a statement around here that each one of us has our own spirituality, right? So all of us together have to, as a unit, in other words, male and female, we're all different parts of that puzzle called the cosmic. And so I wouldn't call us one level or another. I would simply say that each one of us has our role, but the female role certainly is to implant more spirituality into the world. She was born naturally more spiritual than the male part.
Now, I was reading in one of the books, and I forget which of the Bergs wrote the book. It was one of the male Bergs. He was writing, and I'm paraphrasing here, so please feel free to correct me. He was saying something about he didn't want readers to misunderstand. He said that so often in the books they refer to man, but that doesn't mean that they are just talking and trying to teach to men. He said, he went on to say something to the effect of, they in Kabbalah, they really do consider women more spiritually evolved. So it's the men they feel like needs more help. It's the men that have to learn to bring the sacred feminine within themselves if they're going to be successful and happy and lead a good life. Did I sort of sum that up right? Did I understand that?
I think that's very right. And to explain it further, that's why there are more rituals that men go through than the female goes through. And that's why they have to sort of become part of that level. Naturally, women are born into that. That's why, you know, the bearing of the child, the intuitiveness, the ability to open up their spiritual channels is far greater in the female than it is in the male. As we should know, by the way, that the female fetus is stronger than the male fetus. And that a child that is born, if there is any difficulties in birth, the chances of a female child surviving is far greater than the male child. Because naturally, we are stronger mentally and physically.
Well, okay. Again, you're talking my audience's language. We love our men, but, you know, we want the women to be empowered and come into their own as well. Well, you know, speaking of helping the men, and the men have more rituals than women to do, is that where this tradition comes in at the Shabbat? The men are wearing white, and the women don't have to wear white?
Well, no, actually, that the men wearing white, it would be nice if we could all wear white, but we wouldn't want to impose that on people. But the reason that basically the men do wear white is simply that the white is the color that, you know, reflects the light of the sun, whereas any other color absorbs. That's basically it. And then Shabbat is a time when the idea of reflecting light, that we all become one. And you could be right and say the reason for that is by being who they are, they can see the restriction in even what they wear. We do it simply because if you're a doctor or a lawyer or a bricklayer, you know, when you're wearing those garments, you're all the same.
Okay.
And women naturally absorb spiritual energy more than men.
Now, again, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm new at this. I'm just in Kabbalah 3 at this point, so I realize I'm just sort of scratching the surface. But I've started to go to the Shabbats, and I believe I read somewhere that it's the Friday night and Saturday night ritual is when you see the marriage of the masculine and the feminine together. Am I getting that right?
Yes. We light the two candles, and the two candles that we see is the joining of the flame of the male and the female, which means that that's the time when the Shekhinah, which is the female and the male, are united.
Okay.
And that unification brings about that spiritual entity, that high that happens.
Well, now, a couple other things that Kabbalah is about are really, I believe, in sync with ideals of the sacred feminine as I knew it before coming to Kabbalah, and that's the idea of sharing and the idea of desiring, but not for the self alone, that those are such important concepts in Kabbalah. In fact, I believe the teaching goes that desiring just for the self can, you know, bring on negative things that can happen in your life. So can you talk a bit about that, you know, particularly as it relates to the disparity of wealth in the United States and across the globe? I mean, would it be wise to start thinking about a movement to make greed taboo and maybe measure our wealth by how we serve others instead of how much is in our bank book?
Well, I understand where you're coming from, but here's the thing. Greed in itself, you know, people somehow don't understand that the negative things in our personality are the things that keep us from the energy. And what do I mean by that? Take a greedy person. That all his life he's looking for more and more for himself, just to encompass. His punishment is his greed, because he'll never be happy in the world that he lives in. Because a greedy person never has enough. And which means that obviously he hasn't thought about the rules of restriction. For instance, there isn't anything wrong with somebody making $1 trillion as long as they say, now I can build a hospital. Now I can build a school. Now I can put kids that can't afford it to school. Now I can do something in the world to help people that don't have food. If I have those ideals in mind, I can have $1 trillion. But that $1 trillion is not for me. It's to use. It's to have a purpose. And therefore, when I say that, I'm already creating a circular energy. I'm filling what we call our cosmic bank. Each one of us has a bank. We have a bank, we get debits and credits the same way as we would have debits and credit in a regular bank. When we do things that share with others, when we say kindness is to others, when we go out of our way, we put a positive, we make a deposit. And every time we say it's only for myself alone, then we take a credit. And every time, even though if I create this wealth, this tremendous wealth, and I say, okay, I now know that I'm a messenger, because that wealth wasn't, I mean, anybody could have made that money, but it was given to me. My job now is to decide, what am I going to do with it? Am I going to continue just to bring it into this bank? If I do that, then I cause a negative in my bank account. But if I take that money and say, you know what, so many people are starving, I'm going to take X amount out, I'm going to do this, and you know, If the energy will bless me, anything that I get, I'll certainly be able to do more. And I spend my time thinking about what I can do for the world. Then I'm entitled, not entitled, but then I can enjoy even that kind of wealth.
Well, and I know the center does an incredible amount of giving. I mean, you have the project where you are putting Zohars up and down the coast. I mean, I know my teacher Moshe talks about the fact that you have distributed a lot of Zohars in Florida, and since then they haven't even had an earthquake. Did you want to mention that maybe?
5 years, and no hurricane has hit the shores of Miami, which prior to that, every year there was one. For 5 years since we engulfed the entire coast in Zohars. And you know, we've just done the same. We've sent out thousands and thousands of Zohars all over, because we believe the Zohar is sort of like an amulet wherever it goes that says, yeah, the light is here. You can't hurt me in this place.
And for my listeners who don't know, the Zohar is probably the most sacred book of the Kabbalist. Is that right?
Yes, it is. It is the ancient teaching, and it is the core of all the teachings of Kabbalah that were to come after that.
Okay. Well, you know, when I tell people I'm studying at the Kabbalah Center in L.A., the first thing they automatically think is the Kabbalah studies or Jewish mysticism. But that's not how the teachers at the center describe it. Can you explain more accurately how you would, define what Kabbalah is?
Well, first of all, they're right in one aspect, that the teachings themselves stem from this book called the Zohar, which is an ancient text, and the knowledge comes from this ancient lineage, which does come from the original translation of the five books of Moses. But in the Kabbalah Center, what we do is we glean from that the philosophy, which says that our teachings are there to teach people to be a better whatever they are. That part of those teachings is judge not, lest ye be judged. We will hand you a set of explanations, a set of theories. We will give you tools. But what you choose to take or not take from those tools to use as part of your ritual life, that's your decision. The Kabbalah, as we perceive it, is as there are religions in this world that you become, that you're Muslim or you're Christian or you're a Jew or you're just an entity that believe in nothing else. It predates Judaism as a religion. But the thing that puts people together is the idea that that thing that exists in every human being called the soul has the energy of a creative force, and that is the unifier. Spirituality unifies people, and sometimes religion sort of can make a separation. So in the center, we teach, we draw the spiritual aspects of the Zohar, and we bring them down into actual knowledge so that we can use them practically to change the person that we are today to that person that will be better in the future.
Okay. Well, let me just throw one sort of academic/historical question at you, and then I want to start talking about your Power of Peace project and peace through people. We know that over at the Kabbalah Center, the Hebrew letters are used a lot, and in fact, the 72 words of God are considered, well, I'm going to use the word magical, but they're powerful letters to help transform so that we can become better people. Well, linguistically in Hebrew, I know nouns reflect gender. They're either male or female. And many words in Hebrew, like even Kabbalah or the name of God, have feminine endings. Some also see similarity between the sephiro and the tree, which was an ancient goddess symbol, the tetragrammatron, or six-pointed star, the symbol for God. Well, that one's represented to some people, they say, the masculine and feminine. Well, when you couple all that with your belief in sharing, your desiring not for the self alone, as I sort of see as opposed to selfishness, and your positive views of women and their, you know, spiritual I hate to use the word superiority, but you know what I mean. They're more evolved spiritually. Would you say to someone who asked if maybe the early Kabbalists perhaps borrowed or learned something from ancient goddess cultures or maternal values?
Oh, well, for sure. I mean, the entire teaching, the Bible, it talks about, you know, if you read the Bible literally or anyway, you would open it up in the Old Testament. You know, God tells Abraham, you know, listen to Sarah. Do what she's telling you to do. The same thing with Rivka. She has a problem between her two sons. So she, and God says, you know, do what you think is right, Rivka, because you are the person that's going to initiate this spiritual energy. And through the Bible, you will see, I mean, there was the wars, for instance, with the Maccabeum. There was always a female that was at the head. Esther, when we talk about Purim, when we talk about Yael, who put the sword through the head of the king during the battle. Always there has been a female presence that created the turning, if you will, the impetus that made the difference between falling or being raised up.
Okay. I'm getting a question in from one of my listeners right now, Karen. She's saying that she thinks her friend's understanding of Kabbalah is probably skewed from what she's hearing you say on the radio. But he says he studies Kabbalah, but he still prays to God and gives thanks he's not a woman. Is he confused? Is that not Kabbalah?
There is a prayer. And there is part of the prayers in the morning, one of the prayers that they say, that it says, thanks that you didn't make me a woman. And the female says, thank you for creating me as I am. That's one of the prayers that are said. But the reason that that prayer is there is, for instance, thank you for creating me not a woman, is because the woman comes down to this world complete. She comes to mend things in this world, to create things, to bring spiritual energy to this world. The male comes down to correct his own process. So when he says, thank you for not creating me as a woman, it's saying, giving me the other chance to correct what I've come here for.
Ah, so it's
so
the interpretation.
He's right, but his reasoning isn't quite right.
I see. So he's missed the interpretation. He really
That's
wishes
right.
he probably were a woman, then he wouldn't have so many corrections to make.
That's exactly right. He wouldn't have to get those all those prayers.
Okay. And finally, if someone asked you if Shekinah, and I know I'm not pronouncing it exactly the way you do, forgive me, do you consider Shekinah subordinate to God, or is she his equal, his partner?
The Shekinah. Well, let's say that the same way as the creative force, let's say that we believe is what we call God or the energy in itself has no gender. It's neither male nor female. It is just energy. But the Shekhinah, why do we call it female? Because in that level is the level of all the action. It's the ability to draw up to the energy of the light, to become part of it. When we were created from a, let's say, huge mountain of energy, and then we were subdivided. The idea of the Shekhinah is to be the process by which we can recreate ourselves to this huge mountain of energy. So the creator, in what we call the creator, or the energy of the creator, is non-gender. It doesn't have a gender.
You refer to
it's
it
like
as the light, in
light.
Fact. I mean, I've never really heard many of the teachers even use the word God.
Right, because it's the idea of what is light? It's neither male nor female. It's just light.
Right. Energy, like
and
you said.
Right, exactly. So there is no gender. That's why I named it God Wears Lipstick, meaning that oftentimes people feel that, you know, what do you mean? God's male. God's not male. God has no gender of itself.
Okay. All right. And they teach and believe at the Kabbalah Center that we create miracles. And one of the ways we create miracles for ourselves and our lives and our loved ones is leaving our comfort zone. I promise that's the last question, and then we'll get to all your good work in the world.
That's okay. Why? What do you mean leaving the comfort zone? Well, yes, it's like there are people that, you know, people say they really need a miracle in my life. Okay, what are you going to do for it? Well, what do you mean I have to do for it? I mean, God's got to do for it. The answer is no. If you want something to change in your life that's really in bad shape, you've got to get out of your own way. You have to figure out how you can share. You have to figure out how you can change an aspect of you that may be a little bit too selfish. It means going above your comfort zone, meaning what? Who wants to get up, you know, early in the morning and maybe read or do some prayers or do a meditation and get involved with nature and trying to feel that I can be less selfish than I am? What is it that I can give of myself? What is it that I can change to make me a better person? And yes, if I do those things, then perhaps I can then create a miracle, but the miracle must start with me. Because if I don't do the action, I don't do the motivation, then I can't motivate. Because life, you know, is caused by action, is by movement.
Right. Well, you know, so often, you know, I run into folks who, for instance, they want a job, and they'll pray and pray and pray, but they maybe won't send out resumes.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm talking about. There's a beautiful story we tell about a guy. He was, you know, I don't know if you heard this, but he was drowning in the sea, and they send him a boat, and they throw him on a life preserver. He says, "No, I want God to save me." And the boat leaves, and then they send him a helicopter. And he says, "No, I want God to save me." You know, and then they finally send out a second army, "I want God to save me." Well, P.S., the guy drowns. And he goes to heaven, and he tries to talk to God. And he says, "How come I died? You know, I prayed to you. How come you didn't save me?" He says, "Who sent you the helicopter? Who sent you?" That's the point, you know. People think that I just have to, you know, ask for it. No, if you want something to happen, you've got to be the first motivation. You've got to be the thing. No?
Yeah, we have to be in control. We have to be proactive.
And we have to change something in our nature for nature to change for us.
I see. Makes perfect sense. Well, Karen, I know you also write for the Huffington Post, and I read a little brief article you had in there about early in the year you attended the Power of Peace Conference to promote global spirituality. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, I certainly can. Our whole platform, there's a platform that we're working on, and that is that no matter what you think, or no matter what I think, and we can be totally contrary, but we still have the right and we should have the dignity to listen to each other at least and to see on the lines in which we can agree. And I was with Mrs. Sadat, the wife of the president of Egypt, and we were talking together on the same platform. She was talking about her views and I was talking about mine. And but, you know, we met halfway and we found things that we could agree upon. And that's the important thing. It's very simple to disagree. You know, the idea is to find aspects. 2 weeks ago, we did a conference with one of the Muslim sheikhs and a Jesuit priest and myself. And basically, we spoke about God. And he quoted the New Testament, and I quoted Jesus. But the difference was very simple, that we all said and we all spoke about that the unification is only in the field of spirituality. And they agreed. And this is the thing. This peace through people means I have to train myself not to see the negative first, because we all do. The moment we see a person, we judge them. We judge the way they dress, the way they look, the way they smile. We judge them. If we can somehow cause that level of restriction to go back and say, find the good thing in this person first. Find the way you can relate to them. And who? Not outside, not the politics, but each one of us. If we can find that inside of ourselves, then we can work with others. And I think that's primary.
So is that part of the Peace Through People project? How does that all tie in? What is the Peace Through People project doing?
Okay, basically what we're doing is we're meeting with different world leaders, we're meeting with different philosophers, different religious leaders, and basically trying to create a forum by which we can sit together and find a format which agrees with all of us as one. In other words, we're not going to agree on everything. But we can agree on spiritual laws of cause and effect that each one of us will take back to our congregations through the other. That's number one. And then I'm talking around the world to create the awareness that peace doesn't happen because of our leaders, our politicians. Peace happens one person at a time. I mean, today we see green energy like we never saw before because of people. Because of people getting together. We see natural medicine becoming, and homeopathy, et cetera, alternative medicine, becoming a great, you know, vast majority of work because people together have decided that they don't want the old ways. And one of the other lessons of Peace Through People is simply how through spiritual teaching one finds that peace within himself. And one must have some form of unity inside with himself in order to go on and then to help other people find that peace.
Okay. Now, if someone, is there an opportunity for listeners, if they're interested, to find out more about the Peace Through People Project, or I don't know, or do you need volunteers, or should they just be aware of it?
No, I think they basically can go into the website. It's part of the website. And we're going to have shortly our own website, which we're just starting, just Peace Through People. And see the kind of work that we want to do. They certainly can volunteer if they've got small groups that they want to get together. I mean, you know, and do things in a way that we can form a spiritual bond. The idea is to volunteer maybe, but the point of this whole thing is to bond the people together who want to have a spiritual voice that unites people. And it could be, you know, from ministers to teachers to it doesn't matter. The more people that we have, the more people that we join together, the stronger the bond is. It's like when you have one piece of string, you can break it, but thousands of pieces together is impossible to break. By the way, it's emailkb@kabbalah.com. emailkb@kabbalah.com.
Okay, great. Well, some of the other work you're doing, you have a program called Success for Kids, the organization for young people. What are you doing with kids, Karen?
Success for Kids is a program where we teach disadvantaged kids. And we go into places like South Central here in Los Angeles and lots of places in Brooklyn and New York. And basically what we do is we have programs to empower children to know their own worth, to understand that they have, even though they seem to be in slums and they have difficulty, to teach them tools, spiritual tools, to draw themselves out of that and to find their own self-worth. And we have, it's a free program, obviously, for these kids. And we have teachers, psychologists, and people that work in the underprivileged place. And the reason for that is that we have a new website, the community of SFK, where people can see the work that we do. We have something in the Middle East called Kids Creating Peace, which is a union between Israeli kids and Arab kids, Muslim kids, et cetera, and so forth. And the thing we try to, our message in the world is that peace doesn't happen by thinking someone else is going to do it. If each one of us tried to find that part of us, that was peace. And each one of us tried to make peace with one more person. That way, we can create a peace in the world.
Karen, do you sleep? You know, I'm
wondering.
Oh,
yes,
I sleep very well,
thank you, Mom. But,
well, no, I just mean, how do you have the time? You must have to be working at 2 and 3 and 4 a.m. to get all that you're doing done.
Listen, at my age, I'm trying to run away from this clock, so if I keep working, maybe it won't catch up to me.
Well, now you're doing correctional outreach, too, for prisoners. Let me ask you, I'm an interfaith minister myself, and sometimes we run into the problem with prisoners that if, you know, they sort of have to go through this filter of the Christian chaplain. Does the Kabbalah Center run into any problems teaching Kabbalah to the prisoners?
Well, most of our outreach in that level is in Miami, and we have a great guy there who is responsible for that program. And he's okay. He gets into the prisons and he goes in, and he doesn't seem to have the problem. But here, by the way, in Los Angeles, we were faced with that last year when we went to go downtown to the big prison, and the Catholic minister, we told him we want to teach spirituality. He sort of shunned his nose on that, you know. But
yeah,
he did allow us to drop books. He allowed us to speak to you know, pen pal with the, and some of the chaplains like us, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it can be a problem. So
yeah.
I understand where you're coming from. I wish there was something we could do about that, you know. Maybe.
Oh, teach tolerance. Just
yeah,
keep teaching tolerance.
Exactly right.
Now you work with the victims of domestic abuse. Is that sort of, you know, like maybe the empowerment of women sort of stuff? Or how do you help the women who've been victims of abuse?
Victims of abuse, well, we go to the different shelters.
Okay.
And, we give them, of course we teach them, but we also give them all kinds of makeup and, you know, we bring in people from the center that run salons and we do their hair and we give them stuff to put on and sort of make them feel good about being who they are, you know.
Right.
With that, talk to them about changing it. I just wanted to tell you a story about a guy that we met in Panama who was learning through our books at one of the prisons there. In Panama, we gave a library to the prison, and we were in there teaching. Well, we found a guy, and he put together a beautiful song. And that song he made, and it's like one of the top songs there. When I came there to give a lecture in Panama, they actually let him out of prison for that day to come and to play for us. And to me, that's real payment, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's awesome. Well, you know, you've been so successful in doing your spiritual work, but you're a woman who has had challenges and obstacles. I was reading about when the Rav, had the stroke.
Right.
But I think that might be inspirational for listeners to hear. If you want to just tell how you coped with that.
Well, me and Rav were married at that time, I guess, about 40 years. And he had a bilateral stroke. First I was told he had a brain stem stroke, which means that he would be total vegetable. And I said, no, that couldn't happen. And the doctor said, sorry, made a mistake. But that night I remember sitting in the hospital room. And remember, we worked together, side by side, for all those years. We built the centers together. We were really good friends. And suddenly, you know, I didn't have that stick anymore. I didn't have that help anymore. And I remember sitting there that night in that room, and I said, okay, what do you want from me now? I'll never forget that.
And who were
and
you talking
I,
to? You're talking
I
to
was
the
talking
light.
To the light.
Yeah. Okay.
I was talking to the light. I was saying, you know, okay, I know that this is something that we all have to go through. And sometimes when we overcome our greatest challenges, that's where we find our true purpose, you know. Like, I was afraid of being alone. I was afraid of not knowing where to go. I was really scared. I just had to depend on myself and the idea that I was sure that my path was right, that I had my certainty. And, you know, today I have to tell your listeners that I'm probably stronger and more in tune with all what I have to do than I have ever been in my life. And if it wasn't having to overcome this type of a tremendous negative void in my life, I would never have perhaps been able to fill it with the kind of energy that I think I now have.
Well, and it might sound cliche, but you say because a door had to close to allow another to open, that's usually how it works, isn't it?
That's the way it works, unfortunately. Because, you know, every life has its own rain. There is no one that goes through this path called life without pain. But depends on what you do with it. You know, when you take a bitter pill, it's bitter, but if it's a medicine, eventually it probably helps to heal. And
I was just saying, the idea that when one door closes, there's always another option. It's not like it's the end, it's hopeless.
Yeah, exactly right. But the point is, most of us sometimes don't let our eyes, you know, we get so involved in the me, in the poor me, and that I am a victim, and that we get into such a place that we don't see that window just opened up over there. But when one door opens, when one door closes, another door opens.
Maybe too, we can't get so invested in what we think our vision of our life is because we aren't wise enough to know what the story of our life is supposed to be. Could that be it too?
Well, that's for sure. We don't know where we're gonna what the end result is. But the point is, we should never lose the certainty that there is the light in the business. And that a victim means that I don't believe that spark that's called the creator, that life force is inside of me. Because if it's inside of me and I'm still living, that means I've got something, a role, something that I need to do in this world that I haven't finished yet. And therefore, okay, guide me to the next place I have to go. I'll work for it. I'm motivated. I'll do what I have to do. But help me find that place.
Right. Well, focusing back on sort of the big picture instead of the sort of personal internal work, you have a view of the situation in the world that that you think the universe is showing us the old ways don't work, and we need to change our ways before they kill us. What can we do? I mean, you've said some stuff, you've touched on some stuff, but is there anything else? If people really want to be part of the change, what can we do to change the situation in the world?
Well, first of all, the thing we need to do, each one of us, is to check our own consciousness, to make sure that our consciousness isn't in just me. To know that there is a cause, there is a mission. Consciousness is actual living matter. We can create things with our minds. And therefore, if your listeners would just simply every morning get up and say, wow, eyes to see, ears to hear, hands to feel, thank you, God. A consciousness, a positive energy, and constantly imbuing positive energy into the world will eventually alter the massive consciousness.
Okay, it sounds too simple, but if we all did it.
Yeah, right?
Well,
and
you
by
know,
the
one
way,
of the things,
truth is always simple.
Well,
if things are terribly
convoluted,
chances are the person that's talking to you doesn't understand.
Well, and one of the things that really drew me to the idea of the Kabbalah too was the idea of sharing. You know, if everybody, if we didn't have this idea of individualism, of selfishness, if we all had this idea that we really are interconnected and we have to think about the well-being of others, what a different world it would be.
That's right. And you see what you said. Think about. The action doesn't necessarily have to be, exertive. It could be passive. Instead of saying, I hate you, if everybody just said I love you, we can change the consciousness of the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Karen, it's been great talking to you, and there's so much more I could ask, but I don't want to monopolize your time. Let me just close by asking you: is there anything I haven't asked you that you'd like to share with listeners?
Well, I think it's been I've enjoyed it, and thank you so much for having me on your show. And I just to say to you and to your listeners that all of us are one. Actually, there is a bond, a commonality of all peoples. And you and I and other people that are trying to bring this work out, the passion of the spiritual being, are the people that will help to create the change in this world. And people like yourself that are there to see the positive and to see the good, wonderful. And I wish you success in all that you do in all of your work.
Well, thank you, Karen. And there are two people on the switchboard. Let me just, I don't want to disappoint them because they've been waiting about 45 minutes here for us to finish our chat. Let me just check in and make sure they don't have a question before I let you go. They might just be listening, but in case they want to ask you a question, is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. Hey, listener from the 772 area code, this is Karen. Did you have a question for Karen Berg?
Thank you. Thank you, but no thank you. I was just enjoying listening to her.
Okay.
Well,
stay tuned in, sir. I'm going to go ahead and mute you, but I appreciate you listening in. Karen, I'm going to go ahead and check the other one just to make sure. Hi, listener. Did you have a question for Karen? Hello? Okay, they're silent. Well, Karen,
okay,
again, thank you so much. I so enjoy the everything you do at the center and everything everyone's doing over there. I'm glad I found Kabbalah, quite frankly.
Well, I'm glad you found us too, and I'm looking forward to meeting you here at the center.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Have a great
day. And good luck to you with all of the wonderful work you have going on. Good night.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss Goddess, the Divine Feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking and the feminine consciousness, whether the great she be deity, archetype, or ideal, and how these new values and benchmarks can save the world. And you've been listening to Karen Berg, filling us in on how the sacred feminine is related to Kabbalah, and I thank Karen very much, and also thank Miriam and Ruth, who helped make this interview possible, and also Hannah, who was instrumental in all the networking we did to find some time that Karen could share with us. And, you know, just to reiterate what Karen said, it is so important that we find common ground with other people of other spiritualities, and we can find common ground, and together we can make the world a better place. So we're coming into the second part of the show. That's what the chimes say. And as many of you know, adversaries of the sacred feminine, well, they tried to sweep away awareness and knowledge of her for all time. And with that sweeping away, when the great she was made to disappear because of the religion of patriarchy, of selfish and disconnected men and their war gods, well, women and their power, their leadership, their spiritual authority, they were thwarted, repressed, became taboo. They were diminished. They were disrespected. That's why here on the show I'm dedicated to recovering the great she, whether she be deity, archetype, or ideal. Yes, we intend to defy, to taste the forbidden fruit, to be powerful and uppity women, to throw off the shackles, to look under every rock and behind every locked door. We will peer into the abyss of the past so that we know why things are the way they are today. So that we know how they have come to be turned so on their head and have become so unnatural. And we are going to go about setting things right. Why? Well, because if we want to save ourselves as a species, if we want to save the planet, we don't have any other choice. If we want to restore balance and harmony and wholeness and sanity, if we want peace and partnership and equality and justice, it's women armed with our like-minded brothers and ideas of the sacred feminine who will set things back on course. And remember what the German philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer said, all truth passes through three stages. First, it's ridiculed. Second, it's violently opposed. And third, it's accepted for being self-evident. So there you go. We just have to be persistent. We have to persevere. Well, I promised I would share some announcements with you, and I want to tell you about the Socks for Solstice drive that's happening. Let me read this to you, and it comes from Reverend Connie. She says, who wants your old socks? Well, the truth is there are many needy people in the Los Angeles area and elsewhere that would be happy to receive a pair of your lightly used clean socks. According to the website One Small Step Online, most clothing banks receive plenty of clothing and accessory items, but they receive few socks. When needy people come looking specifically for socks, they usually leave empty-handed due to the general public's misconception that nobody wants your old socks. So if you're considering donating to Sweaters for Solstice this year, please consider substituting or adding a few pair of socks for Solstice. And let me see here. I want to just share this with you, too. The idea for One Small Step began when some women were taking clothes and blankets to the migrant farm workers who live in the Arizona orange groves during the winter. A little boy, about 2 years old, stood waiting in line. He was clinging to his mother's skirt. Although it was January, he was barefoot, and he was shivering. He lifted one foot, then the other, trying to avoid the cold ground. One of the women found a pair of men's socks and slipped them over his little feet. The sweet, shy little boy and his smile proved to be one small step like that can fill a huge need. In the summer of 2001, the organization One Small Step was launched to provide good, clean socks to the poor and homeless. Since then, many thousands of pairs of donated socks have been given to people in need through shelters, clothing banks, community action agencies, schools, churches, orphanages, and nursing homes. So don't think people don't want socks. Every day, school nurses see children who come into school without socks or underwear. And you know what? These conditions are not unique to any area. The need is universal. And as Matthew said in 26:11, the poor will always be with you. So if you want to donate some of your socks, or you know what, if you have the ability to go out and buy new socks and new underwear, go to the website onesmallsteponline.org. That's onesmallsteponline.org, and you can follow the instructions there to make your donation. I also promised I was going to tell you about the occupation of Washington, D.C., that's starting in October. Well, it's going to be in Freedom Plaza, and it starts October 6th. And here's what the call says. Join the October 2011 Coalition, groups who advocate for peace and social, economic and environmental justice, and a sustained occupation and nonviolent resistance to stop the machine, create a new world. You ask, what is the machine? Well, it's corporatism and militarism. And what new world is possible? Well, what they vision is one in which people's needs are more important than corporate profits, in which we unite our struggles for jobs, education, housing, health care, and human rights, in which we are free to implement solutions for a peaceful, just, and sustainable world. You want to know more about it? Please go to October2011.org. It's real simple. October2011.org. October 6th is right around the corner. They say they are going to stay there until they effect some change. Learn more about it. Take the pledge. Spread the word. If you can't go, there are things you can do from home, sort of an attunement in your local city. I'm sure, just like with the what was happening up in Wisconsin, send pizzas. I'm sure they're going to need support. And you know what? When they're out there, I would say, email your congressman, email the media outlets, tell them that they're out there. Tell them not to ignore them. Tell the media to cover the October 2011 Stop the Machine. So let's see. In closing tonight, I just want to remind listeners that airtime here is not free anymore. I am now actually offering free gifts if you help support the show. If you send in a contribution, you can get maybe my 3D set of radio shows when I was on CBS discussing with other goddess advocates sacred places of the feminine face of God around the world. You can't get this anywhere but from me direct. It doesn't live on any archives. And if you donate less than $100, there's other gifts I can send you. And you know what? Any amount will do, $5, $10, it doesn't matter, it all adds up. And please remember, like Goddess teaches us, what you tend to, what you nurture, what you nourish, it thrives, and what you neglect withers. So thanks to those of you who have already sent in donations. My last donations came from Chris and Wes, and they are greatly appreciated. And I know I'm sort of sounding like the PBS fundraising drive, but you know what? It's come to that, and I appreciate any help you can give. And please, if you're sitting there at your computer screen and you're looking at my show page and you see the lady with the about to bite the apple, which is sort of a metaphor for remembering and rethinking and restoring goddess, that divine knowledge that was taken away from us for so long. Look around the show page there, and there are three F's that are important. First, there's the follow button. Click on that so that you never miss notice of any of my guests each week. That way, if you're not in my database or I get too busy to send you a reminder who my guest is going to be, you will always know, because I have great guests like Karen Bird tonight. And last week, we had the New York Times bestselling author Frank Schaefer, former Christian fundamentalist, who is, you know, sort of telling us all, beware of the Rick Perrys and the Michelle Bachmans and the Sarah Palins of the world, because he lived it and he knows why. He was in the elite of the evangelical movement before it was as powerful as it is today. Anyway, lots of great guests like that. I've had Karen Flanders on the show, Rianne Eisler, Vandana Shiva, wonderful folks who are way showers and visionaries. So you don't want to miss them. So click the follow button. Also, please become my friend. Click the friend button or the favorite button and leave your comments. I love to hear from you. And if you are just learning about the show for the first time and learning about me, I'm actually a published author. I have two books out there in the world. I'll just briefly say, one is Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations. My husband and I were lucky enough to travel across five continents, tracking down sacred sites of the divine feminine, and that culminated in this book, and it tells you about all the diverse faces of Goddess, who I believe is a poster girl for diversity. And then the second book, which came later, Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth, that's my second book, and it sort of tells you how you can embrace the sacred feminine in your life or in your community. They make great bookends. One's very academic and encyclopedic, that teaches you about the world. The other is much more inward and tells you about bringing Goddess within yourself. It's cheapest to get them from me. Both books are $25, and I'll sign them for you. So for $25 plus shipping and handling, you can get both books. And with the holidays upon us, maybe not a bad idea for a holiday gift for yourself or a loved one. And my website, I want to direct you to it. There's free stuff there. And you know what? We all can use free stuff right now with things being as tight as they are. You go to my website, KarenTate.com. You go to the Goddess Store page, and you scroll down the page, and you will see some downloadable guided meditations there. Very interesting stuff. I've gotten good feedback. People really enjoy those free meditations. So please go take a look and enjoy. So I think that we'll bring tonight's show to a close. I want to let you know that I actually have a special show tomorrow. Usually my shows are just Wednesdays, but tomorrow we have a show at a special day and time. And calling in from Europe is going to be the author Patricia Corey. She's written the book Where Pharaohs Dwell, One Mystic's Journey Through the Gates of Immortality. Well, I don't know if you're familiar with Seti. If you are, well, you know who Patricia Corey is, because she is the contemporary Om Seti. And if you don't know who Om Seti was, well, let me just say that Patricia Corey, she is a very interesting woman. She will relive a horrifying experience she had when she almost died by suffocation from being buried alive. And when she came back, she came back a different person. That experience propelled her on a journey of exploration into the question of human immortality. It led her back to Egypt, where she unravels the origins of the ancient Egyptians' obsession with the resurrection of the soul. She discovered new perspectives on Egyptian mysteries, new timelines as to the beginnings of the civilization. Really interesting stuff. And that's not normally our topic, but I think most of my listeners will really enjoy that. And then, let's see, on Monday, again, this month it's just filled with different show times. Like I said, usually I'm always Wednesday at 6 o'clock, But tomorrow we have the show, and then Monday, because of Rosh Hashanah next week, instead of having the show on Wednesday, I'm having it on Monday. And at 6 o'clock, we're going to have Alan Butler on the show. He is the author of City of the Goddess, Freemasons, the Sacred Feminine, and the Secret Beneath the Seal of Power in Washington, D.C. So we're going to hear from Alan, and right after Alan, we're going to have Mary Beth Sammons on discussing her book, The Gratitude Power Workbook. And you know what? Gratitude is very important because we can transform fear into courage, anger into forgiveness, isolation into belonging. And if you didn't know, showing gratitude is an important tool in the power of manifestation. So please tune in tomorrow if you can. If you can't, you can always catch the shows from the archives. Tune in Monday or again from the archives. And please visit all the shows that live there in the Blog Talk archives and the archives on my personal website. They go back 3 years, and most of my listeners consider them a treasure trove. And, you know, you hear from all the way showers and foremothers and visionaries that are helping us learn to reshape the world into a sustainable future. So thank you very much, listeners. And I'm going to close tonight's show with Abigail Spinner again. This is going to be in honor of the Sacred Feminine, called In the Arms of the Mother.
Evil, Mama Pacha, dear.